Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Smart Pizza Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Bruce Irving, here with you for another episode of the show. Thank you so much, first of all, for tuning in with me every week. Today's guest is Allie from General Assembly Pizza. And somebody from our mastermind group, Anisha, actually, messaged me on Instagram. By the way, you can message me on Instagram at Smart Pizza Marketing and also at The Bruce Irving. And said, hey, listen, I would love to hear the story of how Allie transitioned from a brick-and-mortar pizzeria to a frozen shipping pizza business. And I said, you know what? That's a great idea. Let me reach out to Allie and see if I can get him on the podcast. And that's what today's episode is all about. Allie started a pizzeria. He's been in business for a while, but he started a pizzeria not too many years ago. 2020 hit, and he said, listen, what am I going to do? I'm in Canada. I can't have people come into my restaurant. I have a Neapolitan-style pizza that doesn't travel well. Yes, we can do takeout and delivery, but what am I going to do? What am I going to transition to? Who knows how long this is going to last? And he decided, you know what? There's not a lot of great frozen pizza out there. What if I created our pizza, found a way to make it frozen, get my butt out there, and go into grocery stores and see if I can sell this and make it a company? And now, only about a year later, 75% of their sales comes from the frozen pizza side. That's amazing. He did this all in such a short period of time. And we've been talking about this a lot on the podcast, at least I have, about people asking me, Bruce, I'm on Instagram. How do I know they're my customers? And recently I said, if I was to start a social media platform right now today, if I had no social media presence, I would start 100% on TikTok. And people were like, why? How do you know how many customers you're going to get in your area? How do you know how they're going to turn into customers, or how do you measure that? And and this is a perfect example of that. 2020 hit, whatever your business model was, nobody could come to you. All you had to do was be able to ship or deliver your product. And if you had a presence, a social media presence, where your customers could be anywhere in the world, if you could figure out a way to get your product to them, you had a customer because you built that social media presence. And I've been talking about that for a long time. And Allie is the perfect example of that. He transitioned from people going to his area, which means you have to live a certain amount of miles away from him in order to go there, to a place where he could send his product through the mail to you. This is a great example of that. So listen up, take some notes, learn from Allie. I think you're going to love this episode. Let me know what you think about it. You can hit me up on Instagram at TheBruceIrving and at Smart Pizza Marketing. If you have a question or a comment, we talk a lot about this inside of our mastermind group. If you need some help, you want some ideas, you want some motivation, smartpizzamarketing.com/lab is where you can go get information on that. But let me just say real quick thank you to today's show sponsor, and then we're going to get right into the episode with Allie. All right, let's talk about Bacio cheese for a second. This cheese, I love. They sent me some samples. I checked them out, cooked them with my Uni oven, reheated them later. The cheese has an amazing flavor. It's got really good melt when you cook it in the oven. When you reheat it, it has a really good flavor profile when you reheat that. And listen, I know what you're saying. Bruce, they're paying you to say that. In all transparency, they are paying me to say that. But the reason they're paying me to say that is because I tried the product and I really enjoy it. The other cool thing about Bacio is they have a rewards program where you can earn cash back for every pound of cheese you use. The cash back is mailed back to you in the form of a Visa card in which you can use however you want. You want to put that money back into your business? Fantastic. You want to give your staff a staff meal from a different restaurant? Great, you can use it for that. You want to take your family out? You can do that as well. The more you buy, the more you earn. And you're going to be selling a lot more pizza because your pizza is going to taste amazing using Bacio cheese. All right, so enough from me. If you are interested in checking out Bacio cheese, you can go to smartpizzamarketing.com/Bacio, or you can go simply to their own website, Bacio cheese, BACIO cheese.com/SPM. And if you really want to check out the product, head over to my Instagram or Bacio Cheese Instagram because they post a lot of photos, and so do I, using the Bacio Cheese product. Don't wait. Head over there today and get signed up and let them know you heard about them on the Smart Pizza Marketing Podcast. All right. Thank you, Bacio. I'm excited to share this interview with Allie from General Assembly Pizza. Check it out. Here it comes. What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to the podcast. Pretty excited for my guest today, Allie from General Assembly Pizza. Joining me, he's got a great business. I was reading his bio. He's been around the world traveling too, and looks like from his website, Instagram, they do a fantastic job of pizza. So welcome, Allie, to the podcast. Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you, Bruce. Thank you so much for having me.
I always love to start with the podcast. Was like, tell us how you got into the pizza world, because it's always a crazy story. How about how people get invested in pizza and how they get started? I'd love to hear that.
Sure. You know, my pizza fate actually happened by chance when I was 18 years old. I had finished high school, and not to date myself, but that was in 2001. And I had scrounged up enough money to backpack throughout Europe in August.
Wow.
So my girlfriend at the time packed up, got on a plane, ended up in Europe. And around the middle of August, we found ourselves in Italy. I was in Florence, and I was taking a train from Florence to Rome. And when I got to Rome, we were on our way to Naples. I just took another train to Naples, all to catch a ferry to the Amalfi Coast at noon in Naples. I had no desire to stay in Naples. I heard Naples was just some gritty town full of a whole bunch of people who know, you know, nothing, and they're angry and they're mad and they're going to steal all your stuff and just get out of there. Sure. So I led the train, got in at like 11 o'clock in the morning, and we beelined it to the port. Well, by the time we got to the port, with all the chaos and the thousands of people trying to get onto that ferry, we missed the ferry. It was noon. I was starving and found myself in the old town of Naples. You know, I had no clue at the time that happened to be the, you know, the birthplace of Neapolitan pizza.
Right.
So we're walking around, I'm starving, and I find this place. It's called Solo Pizza. There is a lineup of about 25 or 30, mostly Italians in the lineup. They're all crushing beer and wine out of plastic cups. I was like, well, this looks good. Got to the front of the line, got a table, and they only had two types of pizza on the list: marinara and margarita.
Yeah.
Now, being 18 years old and probably eating pizza three times a week for the better part of 5 years, I grew up in Vancouver, British Columbia. I had never heard of those pizzas before. I had no clue what they were. I knew one had cheese and tomato sauce and one had just tomato sauce. I said, you know, fuck it, I'll have one of each. So they came, they got to the table. I'll preface that they were like €3 each, probably the cheapest whole pies I had ever ordered in my life. And they came to the table, and before, and they were like, there was smoke coming off the sauce and they were like gooey. And they gave me a fork and a knife, and they were uncut. I was like, what? And got into it. And I ate both. We ordered two more. And it was the most prolific food moment of my 18-year-old life.
Wow.
And that moment changed everything for me, because I basically spent the next 18 years before I opened GA obsessing about pizza. So I went back home after that trip and I said, where's the best pizza in the United States? And I, you know, figured out where I learned about Pizzeria Bianco, and I learned about Lucali, and I learned about Roberta's, and, you know, Tontono's and Joe's and, you know, Grimaldi. And I got really into like pizza and like, where did it come from? What are the different types? Like, I need the coal fire. Now I want Chicago deep dish, and, you know, let's do a golf trip to Phoenix so I can go to Bianco. And like, yeah, right. I obsessed about it. So when I was 26, I got into the franchise business. I had a chicken and rib franchise in Southern Ontario, and had a couple of them, and it was great. By 2015, I had sold those franchises, and I decided to pursue my dream. And my dream was opening a pizzeria. I became a pizzaiolo, a certified pizzaiolo. And that vision of when I was 18 at Solo Pizza, like, was, if it's still very fresh in my mind, I thought, you know what, I'm going to give it a kick at the can and try to open up a pizza shop. And we opened GA on December 1st, 2017.
Wow. So it took you like 15, 16 years to open your first pizzeria from that moment.
It did. Yeah.
Wow. What was it like? So you opened GA in 2017?
We opened GA in 2017. People thought, you know, my mom and my dad and my friends were like, you know, do you really want to open up a pizza shop downtown Toronto where there's like 500 other pizza shops within like five blocks? I said, you know what? Like, I have to. Like, I have to. I think this was like what I was meant to do in life. So we opened it, and it was cool, man. Like, at the time, We had two separate entrances because I DoorDash and Uber was like fresh on the scene, and we had a separate entrance and separate entrance for them. And when we had the inside, and it was fast casual, and we didn't take cash, and we had wine and beer and cocktails all on tap so we could get people their drinks really fast. But the real art of what we were doing is we had 10-inch naturally leavened pizzas. And we did a 10-inch pizza because we were downtown Toronto, and we thought this is the perfect size for one person to absolutely crush a pizza at lunch or dinner, or the perfect size to share if you want.
Right.
So we opened it, and we were so humbled because, you know, by early 2018, a few, you know, pizza people had noticed, and we started, you know, getting on best Toronto pizza, top 10 pizza in Toronto, best pizzas in Canada. And when that started happening, that's when we started getting really busy. And we were able to continue to build and dream up pizzas and innovate and try to make our customer experiences and the art of hospitality through pizza part of our fabric.
So you came up with the first recipe for General Assembly.
Right.
How long did that take you to come up with? Because, I mean, you didn't have a pizzeria or really working one. You just had the experience of going to Naples, right?
We did, exactly. So I had our first executive chef had come up through pizza. And at the early stages of our business, we had enlisted the help of a gentleman by the name of Anthony Falco.
Okay.
Who was a pizza consultant at the time, and he was helping other pizza restaurants like ours get going. And between our executive chef and between Anthony and myself, we came up with the dough recipe and the menu and the sizes and the toppings and the names. And we actually started growing our sourdough culture about 6 months before we opened the restaurant. So we had a culture that was brought to us from Brooklyn, and it was dehydrated. And our chef at the time has buddies with another guy who has a wood-fired pizza shop in Toronto. So he actually started working there and testing our dough and growing our dough and feeding the levain every 12 hours. And by the time it got to GA, it wasn't until November of 2017. And as you know, with dough and culture, it needs a little bit of time to get settled.
Yeah.
You know, different humidity, you know, the water's a little bit different. What's the environment like? So it was a process, but it was, I was really good at ideation and having the vision for what I think our customers wanted. But our pizza people and our chefs really brought that vision to life.
Did you bring in an executive chef before you even opened?
Yes.
So you had you kind of had the confidence that, hey, listen, I'm going to run it like a business, and I'm going to like not be the executive chef. I'm going to bring in somebody.
Yep. Oh, well, 100%. I always knew that I had spent a lot of time in, you know, the back of the house and restaurants. I'd spent a lot of time in the front of the house and restaurants, but I knew that we needed to build the team like a solid team with solid management structure, because I thought, you know, if this thing goes well, we're downtown Toronto, we have 3,700 square feet, we can seat 100 people. If this thing starts moving in the direction I think it's going to go, I'm going to need to stay focused on growing this business and making sure that, you know, we continuously meet the demands that our customers have.
Right. I love that. And because a lot of people who are just starting out don't have that mentality. They're a little bit afraid, and they have like a mindset of like, all right, I'm just going to be the executive chef to start. And then if it gets busy, I'll hire somebody.
Totally. Yeah.
Which is tough, because you're always kind of like, I don't know I think you have to have that mentality to start. Otherwise you never really get out of that. I'm the executive chef brain cell of yourself.
Totally. We also had a general manager too. So we had a full-time GM and a full-time executive chef the day we opened. And I thought, you know, I came from a world of franchising, so I understood the structure of what it, how important it is, to kind of see the micro and the macro when you're running a business. And ultimately, like, the hospitality businesses, it's so demanding, right? There's so many moving parts between supply, you know, payroll, guests, customer experience, prep. You know, there's so many functions that you have to oversee for it to be successful.
Yeah. And now let's fast forward to, 2020 kind of threw a wrench in everybody's plans. So I know that, you know, you're a fast casual restaurant. You're used to people coming into you. 2020 hits. Obviously, Neapolitan style pizza doesn't travel extremely well. So, like, what did you do in that point? Because you only been open for 3 years.
You know, it was a crazy day, man. I think it was the 13th or 14th of March. We shut down.
Yeah.
We had, 35 people. We were down to 5. And it was just the management, executive chef, GM, myself, and our kitchen manager. And we stood in the restaurant. We looked around. We fired up for takeout and delivery that day. It was pretty busy for takeout and delivery because we were very fortunate because pizza happened to be one of those businesses that was predisposed to takeout.
Yeah, everybody
and delivery.
That. Yeah.
So everybody was used to it. We didn't have to change anything to do that. We just, didn't have anybody in our dining room. So it was that day where I said, look at all of these people who want this product at home right now. I am a frozen pizza dude. Like, I've been eating frozen pizza since I was like 12, at least one a week, every week.
What's your go-to frozen pizza? I know where you're going with this in your story, but let's get it with like, what's your favorite?
So in Canada and Toronto, I'm very partial to something called Dr. Utker Casa di Mama. Three meat is my favorite. It's really good. I've been eating those for a really long time. And I still eat them, even though we're in the frozen pizza business. So I looked around and I thought to myself, you know what? I'd been frustrated with the options on the freezer aisle for years, even though I still liked the frozen pizza I always bought. I thought to myself, I think we have the time right now. And because I'm looking at an empty restaurant, I said, what if we just spin up a frozen pizza line? What if we just take our 5 best SKUs that are like great for cooking at home? So the SKUs that have more comfort, pepperoni, cheese, yeah, margarita, spicy veggie, like the classics. And let's get a vacuum sealer and let's figure out how to do frozen pizza. Let's watch Google videos and YouTube videos and read as much as we can. We decided that day we'd do it. 2 weeks later, we had 5 SKUs that we sent out to hundreds of friends, family, chefs, sommeliers, general managers, bar managers in the city. We're like, listen, here's 5 pizzas. Just hit us with some feedback. Is the crust, did it cook in 7 minutes? Is it too salty? Is it too cheesy? Like, help us like figure this thing out. And at that time, the community of hospitality and restaurateurs was so welcoming. People were ready to help you. You would help them. They would help you. You would bounce ideas around. Everybody was just trying to figure shit out because nobody knew what like the next week was going to be like. We're like, but we know we're in this thing together. And there was a real sense of community. So that community really helped us. We got feedback in April of 2020. We ended up selling our frozen pizzas out of our restaurant.
Wow. Was it the same recipe that you had for the regular pizza that you got in the restaurant?
It wasn't. It was the same pizzas, but we par-baked the shells. So we would par-bake the shell with the sauce on in our Neapolitan ovens for about 80 seconds. And then we would top the pizzas with everything else was fresh. So the veggies, the pepperoni, the cheese, the salamis, the oregano, the parm, we put it on after. And we wanted people to finish it in their homes, right? So like we wanted that jalapeno to cook in your oven. We wanted the cheese to melt in your oven. So we had to reimagine the pizzas for people's home. And it was hard in the beginning. The first week or so, they weren't awesome. Because we were saucing them and then putting on the toppings and then reheating them. We're like, oh, they're too dry.
Yeah.
So we had to like put more sauce. And then it was like, ooh, we have to layer these differently so that the cheese melts perfectly. And ooh, these mushrooms aren't cooked enough. We have to cut them thinner. These jalapenos are too crispy. We have to cut them thinner. Maybe we need more olive oil on there to help the cooking process for the veggie pizza. So like, it was this total trial by error. What we ended up figuring out is that a pizza that needs to cook in your oven, you need to think about it exactly like that and not like a restaurant pizza. Because if you treat it like a restaurant pizza, it probably won't be that good.
Right. So there was hundreds of pizzas that you went through just trying to test out
hundreds, the
toppings and like which ones go good. And that's, I think, because a lot of people listen to this podcast, and I think you did it. Like, obviously, you moved really quick to go from March to get the SKUs going in April and be able to sell it. That's really fast. People have been in the pizza community have been thinking about frozen pizza for years, and they still haven't done shit.
Sure, sure.
They're just thinking about it. But you got to, like, I think they overthink it a little bit too much. Do you?
I think so. Like, at the core, you know, we are pizza people, so we can get really finite about pizza. But at the end of the day, you're just trying to create something that's familiar to people and that's really, really tasty.
Yeah.
And if you just stick with that and know that 99% of people don't think about it the way you do, just be cool with the fact that if something really bugs you, know that it probably doesn't bug someone else.
Right. What extra equipment did you have to buy other than the equipment you had in your shop? That's true, though.
So, yeah. So we needed, we ended up getting a dough press because we couldn't hand stretch that many pizza shells every day. So we got a dough press to help us out. We got a vacuum sealer to help us out. And outside of that, in the early days, that was it. Wow. It's like everything else was, we just used what we had. And pretty much got to work. Eventually, we started specking our produce so that, you know, the jalapenos and the onions and the mushrooms would come and cut to spec, because we fortunately got to a point where we couldn't do that anymore with RoboCoops and with knives like we used to.
Right.
Yeah.
How big is the frozen pizza part of your business now? Is it like percentage-wise, like do you do more frozen pizza than you do regular pizza now?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So we have a direct-to-consumer e-commerce platform. We have a grocery CPG product as well as a hot pizza product. So we're you know, 85% of the revenue of General Assembly is derived from frozen pizza.
Wow, that's fantastic. And that's just in the last year and a half.
Correct.
Wow. I was on your website. Your website's really cool lately, laid out where, you know, when you go to order for the pizza to get it delivered, and it's like there's a button that says build a box, and then you get to choose how many pizzas you want, and then you get to add from the certain pizzas you have on your menu till you get up to that number of pizzas you want. And it's actually relatively, I don't want to say it's cheap, but it's relatively inexpensive to get your pizza delivered, it seems. It's not super expensive.
I agree. I think we wanted to be super cognizant of, you know, there are thresholds for pricing out there. So we have to work within, you know, what people perceive as value. And I think people really value, you know, something shows up at your door and it's exactly what you wanted. People will pay a little bit of a premium for that product because it's ultra convenient and super safe. Now, if somebody goes out to a grocery store to buy it, it might be a little bit cheaper because, you know, they're actually going out there and they have to pick it themselves and bring it to their home. So being conscious of different value perceptions at different places, whether that's e-commerce or at a grocery store, was really important when we built the model.
Now, how did you get the word? I mean, obviously you probably just started with your existing customers getting the word out, hey, we have frozen pizza now. If you want to order it, you can put it in your freezer and cook it later, right? But how did it grow from there? Did it just grow word of mouth, or what was the strategy to get other people aware of it?
Exactly like you referenced, Bruce. So in the early days, we had this community of people who would come to us to eat hot pizza. And really, it was just our social media channels where we said, hey, we're working on a frozen pizza. Hey, we're getting close to a frozen pizza. Hey, we're ready to launch this frozen pizza. And again, go back to April of 2020, when most people are at home. Everybody is cruising social media, trying to figure out, you know, what's going on here and there and the other place. So the sense of community and the sense of support was like, I pinch myself at how fortunate and how supportive people were. And the second we launched it, we had the, you know, Toronto food magazines, Toronto newspapers, TV even. It's like, oh, let me throw out a shout out here. Let me throw out a shout out here. Let me pop you on this blog. Let me put you on TV for 15 minutes. And all of a sudden, that little community we built, you know, was selling, you know, hundreds and hundreds of frozen pizzas a day.
Wow. So you really took advantage of the, you know, in April, I would say April, probably through that summer, there was really a push for people to support local businesses because we didn't know what the heck was going on, right? We didn't know how long it was going to last.
We did.
Was like all these rules and regulations we had to follow. They were constantly changing. Nobody had any idea of what the heck was going to happen next week. So there was really a building sense of let's support local businesses. So you really took advantage of that. To your advantage, you took it. You moved fast. You took advantage of that exposure. And now, obviously, your product was good enough to maintain it and grow from there.
Totally. We were using whatever avenues we could that were cheap at the time. Low cost, high reward. And luckily, people took to the product. Because in the Canadian landscape and in Ontario and Toronto where we are, there's all these frozen pizzas on the shelf, which are like, you know, your typical ones that you've seen for 5, 10, 15, 20 years. They go on sale all the time for $4.99. You buy three, you put them in your freezer. But there's no like restaurant high quality frozen pizza that you'll maybe make an arugula salad with, and maybe you crack a bottle of wine and enjoy it with your family, or you know, have friends over and you know, make frozen pizzas when you have friends over. That's weird, but it's not weird anymore. So I think there we were also fortunate that there was a big gap in the market, and there was a hole on the shelf, and that hole was just really awesome frozen pizza that was made with stuff that you can read on the back.
Yeah, I think that's important too. A lot of people nowadays are aware or want, or at least are far more aware of what they're putting in their body than they were 10 or 15 years ago.
Totally.
You know, that's definitely something that's changed. And, you know, people, I think maybe social media has done that. Like there's a lot more information available to people a lot more easily than it was before, where you could really do research and figure out what is this pizza all about or what is this company about. And it's way easier to do that than it was early in the early days of the pizza world.
Agreed.
What are you guys, are you still doing it the same way, or how has it moved since that beginning stages of, you know, we're just going to have we're just going to par bake our pizzas and vacuum seal them ourselves? Like, do you have a whole facility doing it now?
We went through the whole process of, so we turned our restaurant basically into a food commissary. So that food commissary was as it was until, Friday of last week. So we went from making 50 pizzas a day in April of 2020 to making 2,500 pizzas a day by, you know, last week.
Wow.
And we actually start production in our master production facility tomorrow.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much. It's been a bit of a ride. So now that we have production out of the, like what used to formerly known as a restaurant, now we get to turn it back into a restaurant. So we actually had to close our restaurant in March to support the frozen pizza demand that we were seeing in the market. It was just the right business decision at that time, while things were still a little bit touch and go with COVID. And now we're opening our restaurant again, and we're renovating the inside, and we're kind of making some tweaks to it. And we can't wait. So on November 1st, we expect to open our restaurant again. And we can't wait to like welcome human beings inside for a hot pizza out of our ovens, you know, like we used to.
Right.
So really looking forward to that. And for now, we're really scaling the frozen pizza business. We're, you know, we got our first grocery account in April of 2020, and we have just over 100 accounts today. And we think that if we work hard, and now that we have a production facility, we think we can get to 1,000 stores.
Wow!
By the same time next year.
That's fantastic. So, I mean, has the regulations in your area been? I mean, it's probably been a good thing for your frozen pizza business that you really probably couldn't open up and have guests in your facility this whole time.
Yeah, you know, it's been challenging. The restaurant community in Toronto, where we are, it's been tough.
Yeah.
Like we've had one of the longest lockdowns in the world when it comes to indoor dining. Now that those restrictions have been lifted, only just, you know, about a month and a half to 2 months ago, there's a huge push to really support restaurants and support hospitality and support the community that really needs it. So while we were not able to open for a really good reason before, we were really looking forward to opening again and having that personal connection with our customers, while we now have a facility that can grow the frozen pizza business.
What kind of changes have you made in the restaurant itself because of this?
You know, what we've done is we've redone the look and the feel. We've made things more socially distant, a little bit safer, because we just don't know what's going to happen again, if anything. So, you know, we've taken all the learnings that we've all learned together over the last year and a half and incorporated them into our restaurant. We built a bit of a retail portion of our restaurant too. Now that we're kind of known for frozen pizza, we've built a little bodega, if you will, that will house dough, pizza dough. We're going to sell dough. We're going to sell sauce, cheese, toppings, pizza kits, frozen pizza, beer, wine, you know, Mexican cane sugared Coca-Cola, Topo Chicos, all the things we love about pizza, and all the things we like to drink with pizza, and all the things we like to make pizza with. We're just going to have a little retail area there. Yep. And then we've made some changes to our takeout area. We use a lot of technology and app-based orders for takeout. I was highly inspired by, you know, the Shake Shacks and the Chipotles and the Sweet Greens in the USA before I built GA. So we've kind of built a almost a self-serve takeout model that's contactless and safe for customers as they come in.
So they order like through your website or your app and they can just come pick it up?
Exactly. It's super cool. We actually are custom building this pizza warmer.
Yeah.
That will hold pizzas, because Neapolitan pizzas-ish, Neapolitan style pizzas, as you know, don't travel that well.
Right.
But if they're kept at around 75 to 90 degrees with ambient heat, they actually stay for a while. As long as you eat them after that, don't let them get cold and then heat up, because that's when they get dry.
Right.
So we actually are building a custom pizza shelf that will hold about 35 pizzas at that temperature. So you'll walk into the restaurant, and beside that shelf, there's another shelf that's like just a regular temperature shelf. So you'd come in and you'd say, Bruce, where there'd be a pizza box with your name on it. And there'd be like, if you ordered a salad and a Coca-Cola, there'd be a salad and a Coca-Cola beside it with your name on it. But when you pick up the pizza, it'll be warm. So I think that's a sensation that you automatically, you don't have to look at the pizza, you don't have to see the pizza. But as a customer, you're thinking, hey, when have I ever picked up a pizza before that's actually been like meant to be hot, that's waiting for me? So those small things like that, we're trying to make the experience better and our product better and build confidence with our customers to let them know that we're still thinking and innovating about how to make this pizza experience better.
Yeah. Unless I love that. And I was just talking to somebody on a podcast yesterday and I was like, you know, like Panera, Starbucks, Dunkin' Donuts, all these places, you order on the app, you walk into the restaurant, you don't need to talk to anybody. You see your name on the item and you just grab and go. And I'm like, why don't pizzerias do that? Like, why don't we have an app where you can order on the app? The pizzeria has a shelf there. You don't have to talk to the counter person or whoever it is and have them go back and forth 1,000 times a day getting people's orders off of the shelf or off of the oven. Why can't they just have a shelf? We just go in, grab it and go. I don't understand why we don't do that. We should be built for that in this industry.
We should be built for that. And you know what? We've seen how well it works. It works well for the business because the labor model is works well because it's almost self-service, which is good for the business. It's also really good for the customer because the customer walks right in, knows exactly what to do, and is in and out within 30 seconds. There's no line. There's no pain. You've done all that already. I think that sort of, it's interesting. The pizza business sort of is a little bit behind, think, as a whole, as it relates to modernizing a few things, especially in urban areas. But you see so many other brands or so many other, you know, salad joints, burger joint, taco joint, what have you, that do that. So customers are conditioned to expect that now in the market. So you want to be able to make sure that you're doing it too. Otherwise they might choose, you know, a burrito over a pizza. And we hope that right. doesn't happen. So
it's just like time is, you know, as you get older, you realize how precious time is. And, you know, a couple things I look at the drive through with the coffee place and you Starbucks drive through this 20 cars deep. And I think to myself, why the hell would you wait for 20 minutes in a drive through when you can order before you leave your house? pull up, get out of your car, walk in there, pick it up, and be done, and save that 20 minutes of your life that you're never going to get back. And then I'm like, people in the pizza industry should do the same thing. Technology now, you could order it on your phone with the proper app, and apps are cheap now to get made. Have them text you when the order's done, so you're not like having the person come in and be like, hey, is this order ready? And like, oh, it's not ready yet. Just text them when it's ready, and they can just come in and get it and go. Like, save so much time. As a consumer, I love that. I never want to wait in line or talk to somebody else. Not that I don't want to talk to anybody, but I would prefer to just order online, grab my stuff, and go.
I agree. I think the takeout experience is purely based on time and utility.
Yeah.
And if you can nail the time part and nail the utility and make sure the customer walks away with, they're like, they thought about me. That took no time or effort at all. And I love this product. Your odds are you're probably coming back.
100%.
Because then it preserves the dining room pizza experience, which is a very special experience. When you have pizza come out of an oven and within like a minute or two, it's at your table. That's a whole different experience, which is like, you know, super like holy grail experience. And it preserves that and makes that special, because there's nothing like eating a pizza within like 2 or 3 minutes out of an oven.
Yeah.
Like, it's the best. And you know, you can make a takeout as good as you can, but that indoor, inside, out of the oven is nothing will ever beat that.
Yeah, and it's different mindsets. Yeah, different mindsets, right? Like, my mindset when I go to eat in a restaurant is different than if I just want to get takeout and go.
Totally.
So like,
totally. And your expectations are different.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I when I want takeout, I know that the quality is not going to be the best, because it's not in its natural form. It's not in its, like, the pizza is not in its best environment, in a box, in my car, going 20 minutes to my house and then waiting for everybody to get ready, versus me sitting at the table and a pizza, like you said, comes right out of the oven. I know that going into it. So for me, it's all about like time and like how much time it takes and how much friction there is or isn't in me ordering from you.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
And I love that. I love that. And I don't know why. I don't know, you know, especially 2020. 2020 gave us all in business the opportunity to do those things we've always wanted to do but never could do it because we weren't sure. 2020 gave you that opportunity. And I don't know why other pizza places who are perfect places to do this aren't doing more of it. And I love your example.
Thank you.
So you open in November 1st. What do you think, like, how did you get into grocery stores? Did you just like cold call them or cold email them?
That, absolutely. We got tote bags made.
Yeah.
And I don't think I ever ordered business cards until end of March of 2020. And I would literally put two of each pizza, 10 frozen pizzas into a tote bag. And I'd take, you know, pack my trunk with like five of these tote bags with like drop, like freezer, like ice and stuff, so they stayed cold in a cooler. And I'd take my card and I'd just go to like, you know, weasel my way and stand in line, because you had to like stand in line to get into grocery stores. And I'd try to find the store manager or the grocery owner or whoever I could that had some sort of authority. I'd be like, hey, do you have 2 minutes? Listen, I went up and down your frozen pizza aisle. I noticed A, you have barely any in stock, and B, everything you're selling is like, quite frankly, like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a Toronto brand. We pivoted into frozen pizza. Here's 10 pizzas. Give them to whoever you want. Here's my number. Let me know if you like them, because if you do, I'd be happy to be here tomorrow with pizzas. And one by one, people would call within a day, within 2 days, and say, oh my God, I love these pizzas. And you're right. I can't keep them in stock. And this is totally different. I think we'll give you a try. And luckily, all of those brands and grocery stores that gave us a try back in April, May, June, 2020, they're still our accounts today, which I'm grateful for.
That's amazing. And I love that you know, a lot of people ask me, Bruce, I want to grow my social media following, but how do I know they're going to be customers who live in my area? And I'm like, who cares? Like, what if you come up with an idea and you have something that you could sell them and doesn't have to be location dependent? Like, build up your following for people who are excited about what you do, and then find something that you can sell them regardless of where they live. And you've found out a way to do that.
Totally. And sometimes that old school, mind you know, way just works, you know. Hey,
yeah.
Hi, nice to meet you. Here's a bunch of samples. hopefully you like them. Right. Let me know.
That's exactly right. Like if your product's good enough and you have confidence in it, let them try it. And if they like it, they're going to order from you.
Totally. And that was sort of how, I mean, it's to some degree, and now that even we're dealing with, you know, much larger change and stuff now, that's sort of what we do. We say, here's some product. We'd love to carry it. We'd love representation in your store. Hopefully you like it. Let us know. It hasn't really changed much.
Yeah. Do you have, so now you have two businesses. You have frozen business, which you can grow kind of from wherever you are, right? As long as you can customers, you can get the pizza to them wherever they are. And then you have the pizzeria where people have to come to you. Are you going to grow the pizzeria, or are you more like, all right, we're just going to maintain the pizzeria for branding and then grow the frozen pizza business?
We 100% are going to grow our hot pizza business for now in and around the Toronto area. We're open to a few smaller locations. We'll kind of keep the flagship the way it is and keep it that special place. But we really believe that there's a correlation with, oh, I went to General Assembly and had a meal of margarita. It was really good. Oh, I went to the grocery store a week later. Oh, there's that pizza that I had the other day at the grocery store. Great. Let me grab one. Also, the reverse of that is, oh, I've been going to the grocery store eating this frozen pizza. There's some people that I think don't even know that we have a hot pizza restaurant still, right?
Right.
And if they're in Toronto or wherever they end up being, they're like, oh, there's that restaurant I buy frozen pizza from. And I think that's an experience we want to continue to cultivate and continue to grow, because that omni-channel type presence, it helps each other, like they helps both revenue streams. There's a little bit of an aha moment sometimes people have where they're like, wow, I've been buying this frozen pizza for the last year. Oh, they have a restaurant. And then when they come into that restaurant and actually get a hot one out of the oven, there's a little bit of belief that person has that, like, yeah, this is why I like the frozen pizza, because this is actually what they were doing first.
Right.
Was just making pizzas like that. So there's this core, there's not too many brands out there that can do that. And it happened by accident for us. So I think because of the nature of how it unfolded, it's really genuine and it's really real. And I think customers like that today. I think customers want to support a business that is just trying to do good by their product and do good by their customers.
Yeah, I love that. I think you're 100% right on that. Wow, what a great story. I appreciate you taking the time to join me on the podcast. GA Pizza, General Assembly Pizza is the name of the business. GAPizza.com is the website. And on there, you can go and order frozen pizzas and get them delivered. Do you deliver everywhere?
Currently, we deliver all across Ontario. And we should have a national rollout by the end of this year.
Do you deliver to the U.S.?
Not yet. Okay. That will be a next year thing, but soon.
Let me know when you do that. I want to try some out.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Don't go anywhere yet, but I appreciate you joining me in the podcast. It was great to chat with you.
All right. Thank you, Bruce.
Thanks to Ali for joining us on the podcast. Thank you for listening. I appreciate you. Appreciate all the messages on Instagram, all the emails. Let me know what you think. Leave a review on iTunes, and we'll see you on the next episode of the Smart Pizza Marketing Podcast.